This is Financial Standard, the definitive source of news, thought leadership and analysis for Australian wealth management professionals. Financial Standard, take the lead.
Welcome to the Financial Standard podcast. I'm your host, Karen Vergara, a senior journalist at Financial Standard. So much has happened in the financial markets over the last 15 years. From the raging bull market to the rise of passive investing to the crypto phenomenon, which asset classes have been the most generous to investors who invested $1,000 back in 2010? Two academics from RMIT University and Swinburne University of Technology crunched the numbers and came up with some very interesting results. To talk us through these, we have joining today is Jason Tian, Senior Lecturer of Finance at Swinburne University of Technology. Jason, thank you so much for your time and welcome.
Thanks for having me on the show, Karen.
Okay, Jason, first things first, let's talk about your role at Swinburne University and what you do there.
My name is Jason Tian, so I'm a Senior Lecturer in Finance at Swinburne University of Technology, where I'm actually also the course director for our Master Finance program as well. My background is a little bit unusual for academic, actually. So I actually started my career in the industry back then at Macquarie Group as a quantitative analyst. And then I spent quite a long time in Victorian government as a senior economist. I only actually joined back in academia last year. And that's probably echoed in my work in the conversation or other sort of a media work in terms of I'm trying to bridge the gap between academic research and sort of what that means and how to communicate those work to regular investors.
Awesome. You have very, very excellent experience. Let's talk about the research, which we should mention that Professor of Finance, Angela Zong, who teaches at RMIT University, did the research with you. Why was it conducted and how?
So it's actually an interesting question. To be honest, the editor from the conversation, Matthew Hall, actually sort of he floated this idea of, you know, want to sort of look at, you know, how investors, if we actually have a time machine, what would you actually invest back in 2010? Right. So then Andrew and I sort of went back and thought about it. Okay, maybe we kind of just do these thought experiments or data exercise, I would say, sort of, you know, looking at how investors would actually grow sort of $1,000 if they actually put that money across different investment sort of or popular investment instruments. And then after we actually start sort of crunching the numbers and more interesting stuff kind of come out, and then we sort of fine-tuned the findings a little bit and designed a multiple sort of tools in the conversation as well with the help from the conversation team, and then visualized the performance of, you know, seven or six. In this case, actually, we started at seven, but now we ended up just using six. And then looking at the six investment performance from 2010 up till 2025. And then we're kind of trying to share some sort of, you know, insights as well, drawing from the research because, you know, we don't really have a time machine. So, but then, you know, more importantly, it's like, you know, how we actually provide, you know, insights for future references or provide some future insights for investors.
So Jason, take us through the findings. What were the most interesting things you found about the asset classes?
Yep. So let's talk about some numbers, right? That's what people are interested in. Now, I'll sort of leave the Bitcoin at the end, right? Because, you know, everyone's quite keen to understand or know like how much if I invest in $1,000 in Bitcoin and how much I would actually get, you know, today. Mm-hmm. But I would actually like to start with sort of just a regular, some actually very common and regular investment options for, let's say, regular Australians, right? Like a savings account. So let's say if you put $1,000 in 2010 into your savings account, then over roughly these 15 years of time, you would only grown that $1,000 into $1,428 to be exact, right? Mm. So not that much. It's roughly like, you know, more than 40%. Over 15 years, and then on annual terms, that's probably like between 3-4% on a compound basis. But then the interesting thing is that if you actually sort of, you know, looking at the sort of the inflation impact, right, then it would actually be very much losing your purchasing power if you actually put that sort of, you know, money into a savings account. And then if we actually sort of just be a regular Australian investor and put money into ASX 200, let's say, mm-hmm. then you will be in much better position, right? Your $1,000 would have grown into a little bit closer to $3,500. So that's actually mm-hmm. a solid 245% return wow. over the 15 years, right? That's pretty good, right?
And that's stocks, single stocks, Jason, not ETFs or mutual funds, the top 200, right?
Yeah, the top 200 right, stocks as a basket, right? So let's say if we, well, we do actually have an ETF that tracks ASX 200. So let's say if you put money into that, you know, ETF that tracks ASX 200 with all the dividends being reinvested as well. So that's a solid performance from my perspective. But then I think, you know, without going into any further of other sort of, you know, sort of instruments or investment options, but if we actually, let's say, instead of just focusing on Australian market, but then putting that money into S&P 500, mm-hmm. which again, there is a ETF that tracks S&P 500 index, right? So if you put that $1,000 into that ETF tracks S&P 500, then you would actually grown your $1,000 into something more than $10,000 over 15 years.
Wow. Right?
That's pretty good. And the interesting thing, and that's what we find from the research, is that if we're just looking at sort of the performance of S&P 500 over the past 15 years, it's not, you know, overly impressive. I mean, it's still impressive with the contribution of the Magnificent Seven, which I'll sort of talk about in a second.
Mm-hmm.
But let's don't forget, sort of over the 15 years, back in 2010, where Australian dollar was in parity with US dollar, pretty much, right? Give it less and take. But then Australian dollar actually depreciated almost like a 35%
over
15 years, right? So that actually contributed a lot to the outperformance of the US counterpart if you actually put money in the S&P 500, right? And then don't actually currency hedge, right? So if you actually put in your ETF that tracks S&P 500, then you're kind of worried about currency volatility. You'd actually hedge it against the currency volatility. You will actually be worse off in this case.
Wow.
Right? So actually not currency hedging over the past 15 years as an Australian investor is actually doing you a favor. So that's something interesting we find as well.
Very interesting.
Yeah. And then, you know, let's don't forget the Magnificent Seven. That's
right.
Actually kind of, you know, a magnificent story in a way. So we only start tracking the performance from 2015 due to data issues. But even, you know, for a sort of around 10 years time, if you put $1,000 in 2015 and then just grown that money over 10 years time, guess what? Like you would actually have more than $26,000.
Wow. That's insane.
That's really magnificent, right? That's sort of what they stand for their name.
And what does that say to you, Jason, just quickly about the power of compound interest, like versus just keeping it in a savings account, a lowly cash interest account?
So the compound interest actually really works in that way, right? For example, I'm not saying that the compounding power is not there for the savings account, but just because for the savings account, the returns are low, then, you know, the power you get from that compounding interest is definitely not there as compared to, let's say, for the Magnificent Seven, right? If you work out the numbers, roughly the return per annum is like 30 to 40% per year. Now, if you think about the compounding with the 30 to 40%, right, versus the compounding of like 3 or 4%, right, clearly the compounding is going to work much harder with the, you know, 30 to 40% per year.
Yeah.
And that's really showing their power, right? And then there are recent research to show that actually with this much of growth of 30 to 40% per annum, sometimes achieve this exponential growth rather than sort of with that compounding power, right? You really actually see the difference after a couple of years with a massive return per annum versus sort of a small percentage return.
Absolutely, absolutely. Hindsight really is 2020.
And the Bitcoin, right?
Drum roll, please.
And, you know, for Bitcoin, if you put $1,000 in 2010, and let's assume that you haven't forgot your password, right? And then still be able to access your Bitcoin after 15 years and then not touching it or not being scared by the volatility per annum and or the collapse of the exchanges, you would actually have, guess what, 466 $1 million.
Wow.
I'm not actually just making up the numbers. That's how much your $1,000 would grow, right? You would achieve financial freedom, I'm pretty sure, in Australia with that amount of money.
That is insane, Jason. Who would have known?
There's a catch, right? Like, you know,
yes, exactly.
How many people would actually sort of, you know, invested $1,000 back in 2010 for Bitcoin, and how many people would still actually hold it? Because based on the data, I think for Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies, you would have very much lose that access just because you probably wouldn't care too much for a couple of years, I guess. And then you kind of forgot about your access key or something. Or if you put into an exchange, right? And then the exchange kind of collapsed or got some cybersecurity attack and you would lose your money.
True, true.
And the volatility would have scared you off, right? For regular investors, I think very much kind of, you know, will get scared by the volatility. And you would trade a lot. So, you know, no people would actually just leave $1,000 in a Bitcoin, right, for 15 years, unless you actually truly just forget about it. And then you will still be able to sort of recover your password and recover that $1,000 Bitcoin back then.
Absolutely. Yeah. Good insights there in terms of security and the stability of the exchanges. Because look at what happened to FTX, for example.
Exactly.
You don't know what could have happened to that money. But yeah, no, that's very fascinating. Fascinating. I urge everyone to check out the Conversation article where you and Angela put this research. Do they have this interactive dashboard? That's really, really clever. They can see through the years
that's
how much...
That's pretty cool from the Conversation,
That was great. It was well done. So what are the biggest takeaways, do you think, from this research that you would share with us for investors?
That's really a good question. I've been thinking about this myself as well, right? So I think I would actually put this into two takeaways. I tried to do three, but you know, three is a magic number. But I think I really just want to put it as two because maybe that's easier for people to really take away. I think the first one is I would say home buyers is actually really expensive for Australian investors, especially in the past 15 years. And I'm not trying to sort of, you know, forecast where the Australian dollar is going to go, but I think, you know, if you're really just going to focus on home buyers or focusing on Australian market, then, you know, in the past 15 years, that really has cost you dearly. So I think, you know, look beyond Australian market, because for Australian market, a lot of times we focus on the banks, focus on the mining firms, which they are great companies. But, you know, if for the next 15 years is what the technology companies are actually leading the trend, then I think looking at home is really going to cost us a lot. So that's the first key takeaway. Then the second takeaway, I guess, for regular investor is that don't trade too much. I think based on my research on retail investor, and just by the way, I have done a lot of research on retail investors. That's one of my key interests.
Mm-hmm.
And academic research have really shown that retail investors trade too much. And then, you know, that's really detrimental to their wealth as well. And a lot of times, as you can see from this research as well, even if you just leave $1,000 in S&P 500 and just to forget about it, right? Just go out over the weekend, you know, do bushwalks or, you know, spend time with the family, right?
Yeah.
And forget about it, right? After 15 years, it's going to do its job, right? I'm pretty sure like it will do so much better than most of the people if you just do constantly trading, buying and selling over the past 15 years. If you're really going to take away one message, right? Don't trade too much.
Great advice.
I think that's my advice.
So where to now, Jason? What else are you working on? Any other comments in terms of your research and partnerships and your work at Swinburne University?
At the moment, I'm doing a lot of research still on retail investor behaviors and tradings. So, you know, keep an eye out for that.
Definitely.
Might have a more. And we actually had an article this year looking at retail trading in Australia and how they actually react to AFL grand final as well.
Oh.
So if you're interested, you can have a look at how retail investors got distracted by AFL and then trade less, and then how that's going to affect the market quality for some stocks that are, you know, attracting a lot of retail investors. At the beginning of this year, we also had an article that looking at retail investor, how they actually react to natural disasters as well.
Oh,
and then how they actually trade stocks that are more environmental friendly after natural disaster, because maybe that's a shock to their sort of attention to environmental issues.
Mm.
Yeah, so that's sort of what I have been working on this year, and you know, really looking forward to produce more interesting research that can actually provide further insights into the investment world and helping people to understand the investments and hopefully, you know, can improve people's financial literacy a bit in Australia as well.
Absolutely. Jason, thank you so much for your time and looking forward to reading your other research too.
No, thanks for having me again. Yeah, it's really a great conversation.
Thanks for listening to this Financial Standard podcast. For more information, visit financialstandard.com.au. Please keep in mind that the information discussed in this podcast is general in nature and does not consider personal circumstances. Reliance should not be placed on any content without further independent financial research and advice.